do we get the employees or retirees to pay for it? We just think that having the employees or retirees pay for the employer's bill is unfair, that we had done that over time. Now, that brings to the local taxpayer, and what is a local taxpayer? Well, their decisions have to be made locally. I mean, if there is continues to be a refusal to discuss revenue options within the state, if there continues that down that road, and that the only thing left to pay for our democracy is through property taxes, then the cities and towns have to determine what level of service that they want to provide for themselves, because all of these employees, like I said a minute ago with respect to the firefighter, these are employment costs. They cost money, whether it's a firefighter, a paramedic, whether it's a police officer, whether it's a state employee, state worker, or a teacher. I mean, let's take, for instance, a state worker. You could make the determination that you only want one person working in a liquor store. So that means that person would ring you out, stock the shelves, open and close, make sure the money was set, manage themselves.
How am I going to get my dinner wine in a timely manner?
Well, you'd probably have to wait a couple of hours for service.
No, dinner would be cold and I would be unhappy.
And if the local community wanted to go down to one police officer or one firefighter, then that would come with that delay in service and that response.
With the fact that your dinner could be burning up your house, I think there are choices to be made.
That was a...
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So you're saying that the taxpayers
have to make the
choice. We're talking money versus service versus revenue.
Well, if we were private business, yep, and the private business had a mortgage due,
yep,
and the private business couldn't afford the mortgage, you wouldn't go to your employees and dip into their savings account to pay for it. And so that's the scenario we have here, in which the cities and towns have a mortgage, and it's 3.7 in the state, $3.7 billion, which is spread out over the whole system, by the way. It's for 70,000 active and retired people. This is a big number of folks that depend on that. Now, remember, if you begin to take these folks off of pensions, or if you take them and push them off of health insurance, which there's, you know, language in some of these proposals to do, you now increase the need for social services. And I think that Medicare is going to have to go up. And so you basically took them off one side and put them on the other. You know, the pension system is a big economic engine. In 2006, it can be credited creating 3,000 jobs because of the money that stays in New Hampshire. It also can be credited with paying
people who retire and choose to live here, or people.
The $500 million a year that's paid out in benefits that's spent in New Hampshire is part of the economic engine. It's part of that New Hampshire advantage.
And we risk the fact, I know I heard from many people, elderly people, who were afraid of that they wouldn't be able to stay in New Hampshire if their health costs increased and or their pensions went down.
Well, this is certainly a very important topic for all of us who live here and get services here and pay taxes here.
And I'd like to just continue when we come back, David, the misconception that state employees, firefighters, police are racking in these really high retirement benefits.
And when we come back, we'd like to ask you about some of the demonstrations that have gone on in support of our public workers, and a little bit about what you think about the Wisconsin demonstrations. And we'll hear about that when we come back.
Right. And a rally that was held in Portsmouth that I understand was very highly attended. So we'll see you on the other side. To Granite State View, and we are going to continue our discussion with the esteemed president of the New Hampshire Professional Firefighters. And David has been giving us a tutorial on retirement benefits and where it stands, and I think it's been a pretty even-handed discussion. And David, we'd love you to continue.
Well,
thank you.
The next point that I really feel pressed upon to make is that we're taxpayers too. That the 70,000 active and retired workers in the state, 52,000 active and 27,000, I think, retirees, pay taxes too in all different forms.
Could you say that number again? So right now in New Hampshire, we have 52,000 active
firefighters, police officers, state workers, and teachers
who are part of the New Hampshire retirement system.
That's correct.
So 52,000 active, and how many retired?
About 27,000.
Okay, so about half, half as many.
Right. And an interesting side note is that when you're talking about the police and fire benefit, we only make up about 10%, 11% of the whole system. That there's about, there's 1,600 firefighters in the Group 2 system and in the pension system. And then there's about 4,000, I believe, police officers. The proposal, the Senate Bill 3 that we talked about, would only affect about 2,900 employees in the whole bill. Would cut the benefits for 2,900 police officers and firefighters. But what do we do moving forward? I mean, that's a real discussion. I mean, listen, the public really trusts firefighters. They trust police officers. They trust teachers. They really trust their public workers. And then at this time, when they're looking at us to help and to do something, the last thing we want to do is to break their trust. So we're offering the following kind of a three-prong approach to this based on the following core values. The core values are this. There has to be some sort of predictability and cost for the employer. They need it. They deserve it. We're going to give it to them.
So my town wants predictability, and that's what you're saying. For
right.
the cities and towns that hire us, we're going to offer up predictability.
Right. The second thing is that we want to build, in this new pension form system, a benefit for workers 30 and 40 years out that is a fair benefit. And we think that we're able to do that the following way. We'll change the age for police officers and firefighters to 25 years of service, age 55.
55.
If I'm 10 years 50, that's 5 years
50.
Longer.
So if I'm hired today, I need to, those are the terms if I was hired, you know.
Today, okay. That's
today.
Correct.
And they would be vested after what time?
Well, according to the New Hampshire State Constitution and the United States Constitution, they're vested when they hit permanent status, which would be at the end of their probationary period. So that's after 1 year. There's a term of art that some of the elected officials are using called vesting, which says that if you're in the system for 10 years, then you get a benefit beginning in the 10th year, first day. But that's not what the courts look at, the contractual protections under the Constitution. It's when you become permanent status employee. So it will be age 25 and 50. Instead of averaging over a three-year period, would average over a five-year period.
Averaging what?
Averaging your average final compensation. So instead of looking at your highest 3 years, you look at your highest 5 years,
okay.
Which is a little bit of a reduction in benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the new employee would pay 2% more, from 9.3% of salary, which
of
is
his
what,
own contribution.
Right. The employee would pay from 9.3%, which they pay currently, to 11.3%. So the concept goes like this. Work them older and longer, take a little bit less of a benefit, and pay a little bit more for it. Now, the governor's put that in his budget. The governor's costed it out with that, with some small other changes that he has made. And the governor predicts that he'll save $1.5 billion over a 25-year period for the taxpayers. That's the predictability that these employers want.
On that three-point process, say it again, $1.5 billion over a
25-year period.
Now, as I understand it, in the Senate bill and probably in the House bills too, this vesting is a sticking point. In other words, I believe that you would like to, and the firefighters and police would like to have it include those that are in the system now, but who are not yet vested, whereas the bills want to only include those that are already vested. Am I correct?
That means the people who have been employed over 10 years.
Yeah, over 10 years, right.
That's the discussion point, and it's we have an obligation to let our elected leaders know when they're about to, we think, breach the bounds of constitutionality. And we think that if they make these changes for anybody that has greater than a year in service currently, that they bump up against the Constitution, the state of New Hampshire, and the United States Constitution. And that's problematic because that opens the door for someone to unwind all of this work we've done. We know that we can change the benefits for probationary employees and for new hires. It's going to be sustainable. It's going to be predictable. And we think it'll be a fair benefit when they retire. And we encourage everybody to vote for it and move forward.
And your members are on board with this, David?
Yes,
they're supportive of this.
Yes, they are, and it's been an education process, and they're accepting of it. The biggest thing that our members want to make sure is that the benefit levels are similar. When we have two firefighters doing the same job, that the benefit levels are similar, so that you don't have one making less of a benefit. That's putting us. Remember now, I represent some wonderful people. They're willing to risk their lives for somebody they never met, and for that, they're entitled to a quality benefit when they're working side by side.
And they take care of us.
They do a great job at it.
And we are very, very appreciative of this. That's why I think it's so hurtful sometimes when you hear the rhetoric and you see the finger pointing.
And I truly think that's isolated for the most part. The average person certainly recognizes what our police and fire do and what our other state employees do for them and to run our cities and our towns and our state. And I think no one begrudges them a fair and honest pension.
Right.
Well, and I think that these workers, the active and retired workers in this state, really are representative of the middle class. And that's really the discussion that I think we transition into now with what's happening in Wisconsin. You know, it all started on a Facebook page over here in New Hampshire. Protect New Hampshire Families went up a week ago last Monday, had 60 people signed up on this Facebook page that they liked it. Within 5 days, it was over 5,000. Now it's over 7,000.
So this now, is a Facebook page called Protect New Hampshire Families.
And it is started by whom?
Citizens Action, I believe. I mean, I've never met.
Yeah, okay.
They started it, and then out of that was a meetup in Portsmouth at Market Square.
A meetup, what does that mean?
Well, a meetup was some discussion on Facebook. Let's get together and talk about what's happening in Wisconsin, and let's support Wisconsin workers. And from there, it grew into a Wisconsin firefighter and a Wisconsin teacher getting on a plane and coming out and making a presentation and telling their side of the story, what's happening in Wisconsin. There were over 800 people that attended this middle class, and which turned it into from a meetup to a rally, in which was very peaceful. It started with the Pledge of Allegiance. It had some speeches in it. It had a soapbox in which these folks stood on, and then they all went home.
And there was one held in Concord, too. Am I correct?
I think so. I didn't go to that. I did go to the one in Portsmouth.
So you're saying, just like Egypt, there was a social media concept. So let's have a group called Protect New Hampshire Families. We're talking about the middle class, the workers among us, and let's get together and show our support for that middle class and what we're fighting for.
And I think there's a definite connection between the business community and the middle class. Car dealerships are not going to run solely on wealthy alone. Car dealerships, when you sell new cars, need the middle class to be able to purchase a new car every 5 to 6 years or 7 years. And that's how this whole system works. You need a strong middle class to protect that New Hampshire advantage. We hear about it all the time. Look, you folks, the two of you, know better than I do. This last election was about growing the economy, creating good jobs, and watching costs. And I'm going to tell you what, I'm not so sure that some of this stuff that we're doing now has any bearing on any of that. What some of this legislation that they're putting in and discussing has to do with supporting the middle class, strengthening the middle class, making sure that when Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Main Street have a job, that it's a good job and it's a good paying job so they can afford to take care of their children and their grandparents as well.
Well, certainly we would agree with you there, David. But take us back to Wisconsin. We've certainly all seen it on the news and on the headlines. Give us a little bit from your perspective, your perch. What is this all about? How is this going to play out?
This started out with some budget discussions that about affordability in the state of Wisconsin, in which the governor came forward. I listened to a program in which the governor was talking on, in the governor of Wisconsin, Governor Walker, in which he basically decided that he was going to use the budgetary process to wipe out collective bargaining. That's the ability for management and labor to sit down in an organized format to discuss terms and conditions of wages and benefits. In other words, for the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to do this and we're going to do that. This is something which is troubling for me because some of these folks in Wisconsin that are promoting this wiping out of public employee collective bargaining use this bargaining process every day in their business life. Why that doesn't trend? They do it if they're going to build a home, if they're going to do. Right. They set up contracts, and that's all this is in the public sector. We're going to provide this service. You're going to pay us this for it. And then it's a two-way street.
And it's generally a give and take. Any kind of contract, with whether it's private or governmental, it's a give and take and should be.
And don't you think that this is what goes to the very core of, you know, our democracy, that we should be able to engage in bargaining on a in our daily life? And I think this is what has outraged so many of us. Not the fact that you need, as you say, to make some changes going forward. We're all taxpayers. We all understand that we always need to look and see how things are working. But to say that we're going to take away the right of collective bargaining, I mean, that just somehow feels so basically wrong. Do I get it?
Yeah, you do get it. And if I could just take it one more step, it's not so much taking away the right of collective bargaining, which it is. It's silencing the voice of workers in an organized forum. And that just says that a group of workers can get together, sit down with their employer, and come up with some reasonable solutions in a collaborative way. I am really getting tired of having firefighters in this state being scapegoated because of property taxes, because of improper planning, because of poor funding methodologies of retirement systems that were decisions that were made not by the worker, but was made in some other venue. This is getting very frustrating for us because all our members want to do is they want to go to work, they want to go to the calls when they're called on, they want to be prepared for it, and they want to go home safe at the end of the day. And after a career, they want to have some modicum of retirement security, which is what everybody in New Hampshire wants. And we think that that's responsible governing, and we hope that the Wisconsin situation never happens here in New Hampshire.
Well, we certainly hope so, too.
We agree. And thank you, David, so much for coming on. And we certainly hope we can have you back. This could take many more hours of discussion. And as things progress, certainly we'd love to be informed and kept abreast of what is happening with the legislature. We wish you lots of luck.
And thank you for allowing me to share my voice with you today.
Well, it's certainly a rational and reasoned voice, and we appreciate that.
Any way we can help mitigate the rhetoric, as you say, and bring forward the actual facts and look at this discussion going forward in a reasoned way that we all benefit from. So, hey, have a great day and a great march. And thanks for being here.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
And you do have a face for radio and TV, David.
Thank you very much.